The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
So you might have heard this week that Skibbity, Tradwife and Delulu are among the new words that have been added to the Cambridge Dictionary. We have Chris Mulhall here in studio, lecturer in languages at SETU. Do you think adding these words is a positive thing, or do you think that we're dumbing down the language a little bit?
I think it's a bit of both, Aoife. I think the generational perspective is that the language might seem to be dumbed down, but that's the language of probably the so-called Gen Z, the Gen Alpha, you know, I think the Gen Zs are 97 to 2010 and Gen Alpha is probably 2010 to 2024, but we don't have a one-year-old saying that stuff. I think it's probably more of a reflection that the internet by itself has become a language community. And I think that where most adolescents and children are actually learning and developing their linguistic skills through that. So ultimately, when it becomes so ingrained in society, then I think that a dictionary has to reflect it. So the idea of a dictionary is to reflect the language of society. And I suppose it's doing its job in that regard. Now, some of those words, Aoife, Skibbity, Delulu, I think there's Brolligarchy's gone into it, Tradwife are some of the sort of headline additions. I'm not sure. So if you look at language, okay, you can look at its change in two dimensions. There's synchronic change, so we capture it as how it's changing now. And then there's diachronic change, so we're capturing how it's changing over time. So what we see at the moment is a synchronic change. So like when you sync your phone, you're bringing it up to date. So the synchronicity of language at the moment is it's changing. Like, so we see Skibbity is a word, we see Delulu is a word, and we see Tradwife. So that's a capture of the change now. Will that change over time? Probably. Will Skibbity still be in fashion in 10 years' time? Possibly not. Mm. But what's really interesting, what we have going on is as well, is there's a sort of a diachronic change happening because there's no agreement amongst the Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas about what the meaning of Skibbity is. So some think it's good, some think it's bad, and then some are just using it as an utterance. So you might say, oh, Skibbity, and you mightn't have a meaning for that. Mm. So it's a fascinating space in terms of how we now see language developing from maybe vis-a-vis 10, 20, 30 years back to how it's developing in the last, let's say, 2, 3, 4, 5 months.
I'm not going to lie. I am Gen Z, but I'm an old Gen Z. So Tradwife, certainly would have heard of that and seen a lot of that on socials. Delulu, I kind of like Delulu. Yeah. It has a nice ring to it.
I think it's the sort of shortened form of delusional, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, you see,
if you're delulu about something, yeah, you're absolutely mad about something, but it's usually a positive.
Positive,
thing.
Yeah. I think there's a positive reinforcement in it. But actually, you know, when you see all those words, mostly, like language change, I sort of summarised it prior a couple of years back, was into an ABC model. So what people really like doing at language trying to change is making acronyms. So like instead of research and development, you'd have R&D.
Yes.
Or what they like doing also is blending. So instead of a traditional wife, we'll have a trad wife. And then another one is a coinage, where they just create a new word. And I don't know if Skibbity falls into that. So coinage is, I've just made up a new word. Like, you know what I mean? And we'll go with that. So all of the patterns that actually humans like in language still show up in all of these. And they're largely around convenience. You know, we like shorter words. You know, like delusional, we like Delulu. We don't like traditional wife. We'll have a blend or a portmanteau of trad wife. So there is still human elements in all of this. It's just, it looks a little bit weirder as you get a bit older because, you know, the origin or the etymology of Skibbity is on the YouTube series Skibbity Toilet. So if you're not looking at that, the word really means nothing to you. But if you're looking at it all the time, the word means a lot to you, you know?
Yes. So you have to be chronically online
exactly.
when it comes to these three editions.
Chronically online is a brilliant way of putting it, actually, yeah.
As you mentioned there, it's kind of a shortening of things. And back in the day, there was a lot of shortening of like WBU, what about you, BRB. And weirdly, that has sort of gone away
yes.
a bit.
Yes.
Particularly like if I was just talking to my friends, there might be one or two messages that are a shortening. But generally speaking, I'm typing with, full words, yes. full stops, all of that sort of thing. do you think that the fears that were there maybe a few years ago about a whole generation not being able to write properly, that has kind of gone away a little bit?
That's a brilliant question. So I wouldn't disagree with that. I'll tell you why. So if you look at the printing press data back to about 1440, you know, Gutenberg and all that.
Yeah.
And then what that era has been termed as was the individual brain, where a person absorbed the alphabet, had their own handwriting, wrote and interacted with literacy over the coming, and everyone didn't start literate, obviously you had to read and all that. And what that brought about was a certain individualism, okay, and an individualism of understanding of language, and then you created your own spontaneous language that would have led to the skibbities of its day. Do you remember, you know, in the 1970s, even in recent decades as we live. What's happened now is it's got more to collective intelligence, whereas the internet is a source for a lot of the language that I will just maybe push it into the space of children and adolescents are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So the information they're getting linguistically, okay, is less from a book and more from an internet source. Now, if we look at the positives and negatives of that, so the book would have been editorially controlled, filtered, alphabetized, and more literate, let's say.
And correct grammar, because we all know when we speak, we make colloquial mistakes and so on.
Yeah, and they're fine. There's no issue with that. But we had informal connections through conversations. Now, probably we've gone a little bit of an about face now. So most people now are getting language, like I'm saying, youth here and adolescents broadly are getting language from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
They're not physically writing, they're typing it. And also they're using language as the mechanism for connection through social media and that. So that creates a whole dilution of the pool now. So now what we have is we have very, very informal language within an internet structure, whereas years ago the informal language was on the street and the formal was, let's say, in the classroom, in the writing. Now we probably have the formal still in the classroom. But when people leave a classroom now, when they finish schooling, and I would probably say even probably pre-university maybe, how much now are they writing? Very, very little. But they're typing a lot. So we're writing more than we ever did, but we've lost the individualistic way of writing.
That's so interesting.
We just, but also our writing has been predicted for us. So most of your language in a text, probably I use predictive text, and you mentioned they're like the symbols. So we've gone from a formal writing structure to acronyms,
yes,
as you mentioned there, the and then we went to emoticons. Do you remember the emoticons?
I'm a big fan of emojis. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the emoticon is the precursor to the emoji, and then we've had the emoji, but now we have, I don't really know what, do we? We don't have a successor to the emoji? It's still popular, but...
Yeah, it's very interesting point that you make there as well, because in terms of the workplace, and I know that this has been discussed a lot, now when it comes to Microsoft Teams or whatever you're using, the option to just give a message a thumbs up is there in the workplace. Whereas just a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, you couldn't give a thumbs up as a message back to your boss.
Exactly.
It just wouldn't be seen as okay. Personally speaking, working in a youth radio station and people that have grown up with the internet as part of their lives and have used emojis as long as they've been sending messages to their friends, I don't see anything wrong with it.
No, no, no.
But I know there's a big divide there.
One area I'm really interested in my own research is semantics, the meaning of things. So what does anything mean anymore? Really, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, emojis can have different interpretations.
Yes.
The word skibbity can have different interpretations. Does a thumbs up mean I acknowledge it or I agree with it?
Or is it cold?
Exactly. Now, there's some suggestion around that. So one of the big problems I think that's happening from internet languages is that if we go back, because I know obviously we were mentioning about the dictionaries, but that when a word went into a dictionary all those many hundred years ago, or even in more recent decades, it was identified as being existing in a printed press or printed materials for a particular length of time. There was a common agreement on the meaning, and there was a contextual tracing of what happens in these contexts. So we've sort of seemed to have lost all of that in the internet age. Okay, we can trace skibbity to YouTube and that, but who has agreed the meaning? And that's a little bit of a problem. There's a semantic vacuum at the moment in all this, and that could get more problematic. So what's the successor to skibbity? We don't know.
Do you know what word came to mind when I thought of skibbity? Was grand. Isn't that grand?
Are you grand?
I'm grand.
But you see,
it has multiple meanings.
Yeah, but you know, Aoife, you're absolutely right. You see, and you can't disagree with it because no one has come up with a meaning. So if you can impose, you can superimpose any meaning on anything you want. That's how languages change at an individual level, because everyone has their own idiolect, their own way of speaking. So if you want, if Skibbity wants to mean grand for you, that's fine. If you get enough people to agree with you, Aoife, you can start your own dialect. But that's what it is. It's the power of the like a contagion, a viral effect.
And just to touch on these words that have been added and the influence of the internet, I would argue as well the influence of the United States in all of this, because the trad wife, I mean, you can't but look to the political sphere in the US at the moment and not associate trad wife with that. And also as well, when it comes to Skibbity, I believe it was a US YouTube channel.
Yes, I think so, yeah, I think so.
And maybe, you know, the influence of the internet in all of that, and I guess language may be becoming more of a global thing, because obviously we have our Irishisms, but do you think that there could be a fear of those starting to dwindle away and more US language coming into our dialect?
Yeah, of course. I think it's, do you know what, it's a balance of power. And it's a balance of exposure. I think there's, at all times, there'll be an element of identity retained, but the strength of that identity depends on, I suppose, the use of what it wants to be in the culture, if you want to use Irishisms or whatever. But what's interesting about Tradwife and Brulagarchy is that they're coming at a period of time, and particularly in generations, that don't seem to be very gender specific, if you know what I mean. It's sort of this fluidity of, you know, identity, and that is quite common. So I was surprised when I saw Tradwife there and Brulagarchy, because there's a lovely word in language which is called epicene, E-P-I-C-E-N-E. And what it does is it's a definition of something that doesn't relate to either sex. And language, I have sort of noticed, was keeping that going for years, whereas we won't refer to men or women, but Tradwife and Brulagarchy is very divided. It's like a traditional woman or a group of men that might have more power together. And I thought it very much is reflective of some of the political situations we're seeing across the world. Now, whether those words are coming out in acknowledgement or in protest, Aoife, I'm not sure, but once they're recorded, it means society is aware of them.
Dr. Chris Mulhall, lecturer in languages at SETU. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really interesting chat. And if you want to follow him, where can we find some of your musings and readings and all the rest?
There's probably my staff profile on SETU. I'm not really very active on social media, just other stuff. But you can check me out on SETU and by all means get in touch if you have anything interest to chat about language-wise. And we can surely do that, Jack.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
These days we have more options than ever for clothes, bags and accessories, whether it be fast fashion, in-store or online, buying second-hand on the likes of Depop, eBay or Vinted, or going for those more expensive pieces that we hope will last a lifetime. But with so much at our fingertips, does that mean the art of sewing, crocheting, or even repairing and making our own clothes has disappeared? I can't sew. Never learned how to in school, never tried to replace a zip, or even attempted to crochet my own bags or hats during COVID when everyone else seemed to be. But making your own crafting and being a little bit more sustainable is definitely trending, with thousands of videos under the hashtag CraftTalk on TikTok. So with that in mind, I headed to Carrick-on-Shore to the Tudor Artisan Hub, an independent arts collective that sells handmade crafts from crocheted teddy bears to paintings and handcrafted vases. That's where I met Liz, who makes clothes and accessories with wool through the ancient technique of wet felting.
So what is wet felting and needle felting? Is there a difference?
Yeah, wet felting is what I do mainly, and that's about taking a wool product and using soap and water, and you literally bind the wool together with soap and water, and you can make anything with it. Now, I don't sew anything, so you can use soap and water and wool, pure wool, no, it has to be 100%, and it will knit together, so to speak, and you can make anything, bags, scarves. I'm going to try a waistcoat so I can make clothes. My neighbours are all farmers, so they want to get rid of the fleeces because they get nothing for them. So after my waistcoat, I'm going to try dyeing the wools myself and use their fleeces. It's a quite a product. It's hard to do. You have to wash the fleece about 10 times to get it clean. But hey, it's something nice to do, and it's lovely. It's really relaxing to use real wool.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you're getting it from your neighbours, it's literally going from their house to your house.
Yeah.
So it's not as if it's coming from somewhere in Europe or somewhere in the Middle East or anyway.
No, and you can get really cheap coloured wools from China on your likes of Etsy and Amazon. But no, I want to go... If I want really good wool, I go to Gregner Manor. There's they produce their own wool in Cushendale. And that is a great place. They shear the sheep and they weave the wool. And they do a lot of roving wool, that's where I get my good stuff from. There's a lady that comes into the shop that had a purse that she'd had from years ago, and somebody had died, and she said, "What can I do?" And so I took it and I needle felted it using a dry needle, and it's like new again now, and she's really pleased. So that's nice to
that's
be able
amazing.
To do that. Yeah. So
I think that's kind of a lost art. People actually going to get things repaired and mended,
isn't it? Yeah. Well, you don't see it anymore, do you? The shoe shops where you go in and get your heels done, you don't. You just sling them out.
Liz told me she learned how to felt on YouTube and spent the following days and weeks watching YouTube videos, Instagram reels and TikToks, learning her craft, and now she's making a living out of it. Just like the founders of Blast Clothing Store in Waterford City. Having spent time living in mainland Europe, Camille and Leela landed in Waterford 2 years ago with the love of upcycling and second-hand fashion and all things sustainable clothing.
We mostly do upcycled pieces of clothing, second-hand and collectibles, all within the alternative range of clothes.
Yeah, we do have like gothic clothes,
Y2K. Yeah,
DIY.
We screen print ourselves.
How
did you get into it?
Well, we had this idea of opening a shop or a place where people can meet up, like alternative people or like the weirdos, let's say.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we wanted to bring the sustainability.
Yeah, we just wanted to create a space that people like us could come and shop. And also at the same time, we are really into the sustainable fashion and reusing clothes. So we wanted to work within that area, and sustainability is key for us.
Yeah, 100%.
And I even noticed the tags on the clothes are made of old
cards.
Playing cards.
Yeah. It's, we reuse them because actually there's so many around and people it's just for board games or whatever. And they're just there.
we do a lot of reusing and repurposing things. Yeah.
If you get a hole in your clothes or something, do you repair it or do you throw it out?
I would usually try to repair it myself, but my sewing skills aren't the best, so it might look a bit funky, but I'm also okay with that. I would very rarely throw things out. I would either say if the hole was towards the end of a sleeve, I might chop the sleeves and make a t-shirt or make a pair of shorts, or try my best to repair it and just look a bit like a stitch doll.
Can I sew? No, and my Nike tracksuit in my groin area is split. And I needed to sew it back together because my favourite tracksuit. But the Nike tracksuits always seem to go down there. That's my third one in about 10 years I've done that. I want to learn how to sew so I can do that. But can you sew? Can you do it for me?
No, I can knit, but I can't sew.
Sewing is putting things together like thread. My granny was a great sewer. She had the sewing machine.
So my mum actually taught me how to sew, and she would have learned from, I suppose, a very young age. And then we did some basic sewing skills in school. So I've definitely lost the skill over the years, but it's probably something, I could pick up again. I wouldn't say I'm good at it now, because it is just so convenient to buy new clothes or to get someone else to fix it. And it's a shame, obviously, because you're kind of leaning into fast fashion and the likes. But yeah, it's definitely something I want to get better at.
Do you buy or would you buy secondhand clothes?
No, I don't buy second. It depends what it is. Like, I used to wear hand-me-downs the whole time because I'm third out of four brothers. So I got a lot of jerseys and stuff. I think it's the smell of, like, different people that would turn me on. You know, if an outfit I was wearing that, and then I was like, oh.
In an effort to be more sustainable with their clothing choices, a lot of people choose to buy and sell second-hand. After years of eBay, Facebook Marketplace and Depop, Vinted finally launched in Ireland late last year. As a Vinted lover myself, I've done my fair share of buying and selling over the last 6 months, alongside Michelle from Bring the Beat.
I think it was through TikTok I saw that Vinted was coming to Ireland, and I was like, okay, what's Vinted? So I looked it up and I was like, right, it's another secondhand marketplace, and I have clothes, like, oh my God, just so many nice clothes that don't fit me anymore. Okay, I think I'm just one of those people that came out of COVID a different size. It happened to a lot of us, and I've gotten to the point where I'm like, your body was supposed to change, Michelle. Just accept your new size and let's sell some clothes. And now that I'm on it, I'm obsessed with it. Okay, so, like, first of all, what's great about Vinted is that there is no postage fees. So before, when you sold something on, like, Depop or Adverts or whatever it was, you had to pay to post the item, and I wouldn't know, like, was I paying $6.50 on post? Was I paying a tenner? Like, was I even making a profit? So Vinted have a deal with, you know, on post and some other couriers, and basically the person buying it will pay the postage. So all you have to do is print out a little label, go to the post office, and once it gets to them, you will get your money. Now, some people are like, I couldn't be bothered, but I just get a little dopamine hit from making a sale.
Yeah, me too.
And also, those little sales add up. Like, that's my coffee money for the week. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the great thing about Vinted is, like, you can sell everything on it. You know, I started with clothes, then I started to sell books. Then, like, you know, I have a bicycle helmet up for sale. I have, oh God. Yeah, just, you can sell anything on it. Accessories, tech, you know, furniture. And I am just such a bargain hunter. Like, I am a thrifty person. I'm the person who goes through every rail in TK Maxx, who loves charity shopping. And, like, now if I'm in pennies and something's €15, I'm like, €15? I'm not buying that. I'm getting a pair of sandals on Vinted for €5.
With over 92 million tons of textile waste generated globally each year, in order to become a little bit more sustainable, it mightn't be the worst idea to think a bit more about where we're getting, repairing and re-wearing our clothes.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Some Kingfisher for this fine Sunday morning on the Sunday Grill. And in case you missed it, Kingfisher's brand new album Halcyon dropped on Friday. What does halcyon mean, you may ask? Well, it means denoting a period of time in the past that was idyllically happy and peaceful. So the halcyon days of the 1980s. I think it's very fitting, Ava, isn't it, really, when it comes to Kingfisher?
Yeah, it is, but in kind of double meaning, because first of all, their whole sound is a bit nostalgic because you have that, like, hints of trad and all like that, and we'll get into that later. But also, this album kind of marks the end of an era because an awful lot of the songs on it are songs that listeners would know and be familiar with too.
Okay, so we're going to have a little listen. Here's a montage that Killian Doyle put together for us of Kingfisher's new album, Halcyon.
All my distant constellations right in front of me. I put a bullet in the middle of the moon. It was a favor for a fella I knew. Some shots just expectations, cruel temptations, and I don't have to find a way to change. When my time's at an ending, when my days are no more, bury me with my hurley by the river Dissolve.
That last one is hard not to sing along to. Of course, that is Killa. First song, Fire Flowers. Next song, Man on the Moon. And the third song, Ways to Change, which is one of a few new songs on this new album by Kingfisher, Halcyon. Joining me to have a chat all about it is Ava Summers, presenter of Irish Beats. So tell us about Halcyon. Ava, what did you make of it?
I absolutely loved it. First of all, it is just insane. The tracks that are on it are really, really good. the really good quality. They're ones we've played here for ages. Some of them are actually quite old. Like Flowers Fire is probably about 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
But it's still, they're insanely good songs. And they have all like the old familiars, like the likes of Next to Me, Diamonds and Roses, I Cried, I Wept, even Caroline, Killa, Shot in the Dark.
Mm.
But also they've put some new songs on it, which I'm really excited about. So I wasn't expecting any new music on the album because obviously they've had so many songs and they've had a few hits. So I kind of thought, yeah, that's it. That's all we're going to get. But they've got some new ones. Got some new songs on it like 21, School Days, Someday, and Blue Skies. And my personal favourite of the new songs is called Ways to Change, which we heard in the montage.
We heard a little bit of that as well. Now, I know the Kingfisher are no strangers to Beat. Did you interview them for the first time maybe nearly 2 years ago now?
I sure did. I started out as just a Kingfisher fan. I was studying in UCC at the time. I wasn't even working in Beat when I came across them first. And they were studying in the UL.
Yeah.
And I basically had a slot on college radio where I did something kind of like Irish Beats, where I was like showing off what was happening on the music scene and stuff like that. And because I was out there and with different bands, I heard whispers about this band from UL and I was like, I have to check these lads out. And they were just after releasing, I think, Heart in the Water at the time.
I love
Flowers
that.
Fire. They were the only two songs that they had at the time. And I was like, these lads are onto something. So when I came here, I started playing them a bit. And then when we started 21 Beats, I was like, there's only one act I want as the first act.
So we have a little clip of Kingfisher's first interview on Beat.
Other things, I'm Magoo
from Tipperary.
I'm Eddie, I'm from Wexford.
I'm Fitz, I'm from Cork.
So none of you are actually from Limerick.
We need to explain, we need to get this.
Backtrack.
Backtrack slightly there. Basically, we started the band in Limerick when we were studying engineering in UL. And we all basically learned, I learned to play music there. I know Magoo was big into the trad from a young age and Fitz was playing since he was in school as well. But like we all owe, we definitely owe the band to Limerick.
Yeah.
We started in college in 2017, but it was 2020 when we kind of started the band. Myself and Eddie were living together at the time during lockdown. We were looking for anything at all to do that we didn't have to study. Picked up some guitars, started writing some tunes. Magoo lived down the road. We were like, right, well, me and Eddie have no idea what we're doing, so let's take it to somebody who actually has some musical head on
them.
Brought it down to Magoo and he threw some banjo on it. We were like, this sounds pretty good.
So it was just a little session at a college house, really. How it all started, which is really sweet, isn't it?
It is. And you know what? When you're talking to them, like when you're interviewing them, you can tell the three lads are best mates and they've just been hanging around together for ages, you know. And it's so nice that it was just because they were like chilling in their house
during COVID, bored off their head like we all were.
Yeah.
It's actually crazy how big they've become in the past few months since Killa became a number one hit in Ireland. That song, I believe, was quite accidental.
Yeah, they've said it in an interview with me, like literally a couple of weeks ago. They were like, I was like, what's the crack with Killa? Because obviously it was like almost overnight success for them, you know, first Irish number one, massive deal. And they were like, yeah, actually, we made a bet with a few of our friends down in the village pub and we decided that, you know, we lost the bet, we had to make the song, and they just made a number one hit out of it.
It's kind of funny. At this point, I've heard so many radio stations ask the question, tell us about Killa, tell us about Killa. And I know the last time you spoke to them, less than a month ago, you obviously had to ask the question. But the lads were kind of taking the make it out of Fitz for it.
Oh, yeah.
Take it away, Mr. Killa.
Yep.
Mr. Killa.
Written last October as a bet that I made. After a few pints, like now it's being sang in Hill 16.
I should make more bets.
I should.
Yeah. If it results in songs like that, none of us are going to complain.
It's just so sweet and wholesome, I guess. You know, that song, the fact that Asher, you know, was a bet.
This is what I mean. Like, you can tell that the lads are all friends because they're taking the mick out of him. Like, come on, Mr. Killa. Like, that's typical lads taking the mick out of one another.
100%. 100%. How would you describe Kingfisher's sound? Because obviously there's the really strong Irish influence, but then you have the upbeat rocky tunes. Would you call it folk, rock, pop, or
folk would be the main one. That would be the main genre that I'd lump them in. But like they do have a real kind of a rock sound. That you could even border it on like alt pop, folk pop. But the thing is that what makes them really folk more than anything is Magoo on the banjo.
Yeah.
Like, And in the first interview they ever did with me, they said that they were massively influenced by Mumford and Sons.
Yes.
And you can kind of hear that in the music. But as time has gone on, I don't know, I feel like that Mumford sound is kind of starting to dissipate a little bit in some of the newer tracks.
They've kind of created their own sound, yeah. Really.
Yeah.
I have to say, the guitar and the banjo on some of the tracks, I mean, there's some serious musicianship. Like some of the melodies and tunes on the banjo and the guitar are just awesome.
Oh, absolutely. And if you've ever seen Kingfisher live, their thing, like, I remember seeing them in the Set Theatre in Kilkenny, and I was absolutely blown away by the fact that every time I turned around, Fitz and Magoo were on a different instrument. It could be banjo, could be mandolin. They were playing the box at one point. Like, they just literally, they're constantly swapping instruments, and it's gas. But the musicianship is fantastic. And even to Eddie, his voice is so like...
Oh, his voice is unbelievable.
The second you hear it, it's so distinctive. Like, you just know it's him, which is something that not an awful lot of people have. Like, you either have that or you don't.
We're in a real era of Irish music influencing popular music. So you have Kingfisher. You also have Amble.
Yeah.
And I believe that you asked the lads about whether or not there's any competition between the two.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a naughty question, but it was one that was actually really on my mind as a fan, as a music fan in Ireland. You can't help but notice, you know, these are two bands, both three members, three young fellas. They're playing kind of similar music, and you'd have to, like, I personally think that there would be competition between them, because how wouldn't there? But according to the lads, not really, actually. Apparently they're all mates.
That was a TikTok edge. Remember the TikTok was like, is this a Kingfisher or Amble Sunset? It's giving. Very funny. No, well, the boys have been great friends of ours for years. They supported us on our very first tour. Yeah. And just before the tour started, they released Lonely Island. And sure, by the time the tour was going on, they were almost as big as we were. So yeah, it was kind of a mismatch of a tour at that point. But no, they've been good friends with us.
Oasis or Blur?
Okay, back to this record, Halcyon. How would you describe it? What would you rate it? What are some of the tunes you think people should listen to?
Oh, it's a really tough one. It's an incredible album. So I'd have to give it either a 4 or a 4.5 star rating. Absolutely.
Out of 5.
Yeah, because the music on it is insane, and the craftsmanship and even just the recording, everything on it is incredible. Where it's losing its mark is just a couple of little ordering things. Now, once again, if you're listening to it on shuffle or whatever, it's not going to really bother you. But just as somebody who likes to sit back and listen to the whole album, there's places where the flow is kind of lost on me. You know?
But all in all, 4.5 stars out of 5 for Halcyon, Kingfisher's brand new album. Ava, do you have anything else coming up from 8 o'clock on Irish Beats?
Well, actually, I have the new song from Amble. Considering we were just talking about their rivalry friendship, their new song Hand Me Downs came out on Friday as well. Came out the same day as the album, which I think, you know, that's a little
bit adding to the speculation.
That's a little bit juicy, but no, overall, incredible album. Delighted with it. We'll definitely be listening to it nonstop.
Be sure and check out Ava Summers, 8 o'clock tonight, Irish Beats, all of the latest tunes from Irish artists across the country and local too. So brilliant Irish music on the way from 8 with Ava. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Eva.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
So we're all getting prepped for back to school and darker evenings, but maybe you want to brighten up your wardrobe a little bit in the next few weeks and add a bit of autumn outfits and colours and wine and mustard and all the rest to it. Well, our next guest is known for her style on socials with over 106,000 followers alone on Instagram. You may have spotted her in recent weeks judging at the Tramore races. Niamh de Bruin Reid, how are you? Busy few weeks you've had. How is everything going with you?
Thank you for having me on. Yes, it's been a busy few weeks. We had the Tramore races last Saturday, which was just such a fabulous day. And like, I think the style is just improving year on year. We'd head down there every year. This was the first year I was judging. And I just think that the style is getting better and better. And I loved going around talking to all the winners, everybody who put in an effort. It was just a really lovely afternoon. So yes, it's been a busy few weeks.
And do you know what I noticed just from watching videos on socials? When it comes to style at the races, yes, there would have been a time it would all be about the designer. But now it's a bit of mix and match. People are wearing second-hand things. People are borrowing. People are, I guess, you know, getting bits and bobs from online. So you don't necessarily have to fork out thousands and thousands for the outfit to look good.
No, certainly not. And I think when it comes to dressing, the biggest part is what you feel most comfortable in. You know, like what you feel comfortable in mightn't be what somebody else does. And I think when you feel comfortable in your own clothes, you walk with a certain sense of confidence. And that doesn't have to come from something that's just expensive. You know, I loved talking with people on Saturday and, you know, getting the story behind their outfit, why they wore it, how they put it together. You know, for me judging it, I wasn't looking to see like what designer somebody was wearing or, you know, what's in current stock. That didn't even cross my radar. It was more of, you know, the look of it, the story, backstory behind it. So yeah, it doesn't have to be expensive. It's a lovely mix, which I think is more, you know, relatable for people because people don't have, you know, that disposable income with the cost of everything these days to spend on one race day outfit. You know, they want to be able to rewear and borrow and, you know, share and, you know, reuse.
And do something different with it. As you said there, repurpose it. Do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
I know that you have a lot going on at the moment, that you're expecting your second child at the moment. You looked absolutely beautiful at the races, can I just say as well. You had a, like, kind of, was it a white dress? It was very My Fair Lady, the kind of black hat, very classic. How are you finding dressing through pregnancy and all of that? Do you, because I know I have friends now that would decide, do you know what, I'm not actually going to buy that much maternity clothes. I'll do a few bits and bobs and wear some of my own stuff oversized.
Yeah, so look, I'll be honest, when I'm at home most of the time I'm in my husband's sweatpants or his oversized t-shirts, because that, anybody who's expecting will know that they're the clothes that are most
100%.
comfortable. But if I am going somewhere, I do like to, you know, I do like to put in more of an effort on the days that I'm not sick or that I'm feeling up for it. You know, there's been many a day I've had to head into Kilkenny City to do a few jobs in his sweats and t-shirt. But look, that's part of it too. But I didn't actually buy too much just yet. I have a few bits that I saved from my first pregnancy, you know, in the hope that if we were to be so lucky to fall pregnant again. I haven't bought a massive amount, to be honest. I did buy a pair of jeans only quite recently because my jeans have gotten very tight, with most of them now not fitting me. So look, instead of trying to squeeze myself into them and making myself feel crappy about myself and, oh, my jeans, my clothes don't fit, I said, you know what, bite the bullet, buy the few bits, be comfortable.
And it's probably good to maybe buy the staple bits, like as you said there, the jeans, where, and you might get away with like something oversized for a top, but there probably are a few little staple bits that you might need to get.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I did buy some t-shirts, some tops, some leggings for the gym. Some bits that have the, you know, the pregnancy band on top for comfort. And just, I think, as I mentioned earlier, when you feel comfortable in what you're wearing,
100%.
It brings a sense of confidence as well.
Yeah. And in terms of yourself and life and all of that at the moment, I just saw there on Instagram as well that your lovely little girl is starting preschool. So big change, obviously, on the horizon. How has it been prepping for all of that?
Yeah, good. So Harper will start preschool at the end of the month, first kind of week in September. Yeah, I haven't thought about it too much because I know I'll get myself upset if I do.
No.
It's great that she's growing and thriving, but I don't know, she's almost three now. I just feel like the last 3 years have gone so fast, and everybody does say it to you and to enjoy it. But I think sometimes when you're in the throes of it and you're trying to work and, you know, you sometimes do take it for granted. So I'm not really thinking about it too much. I'm just trying to enjoy the time until she does start, because she's still my baby.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. Tell us anyway, I'd love to get a few more style tips from you. So in terms of autumn and buying those staple bits for the autumn, what are, do you think, the key things that are good to have in the wardrobe as we head into the cooler weather now? I know it's still a bit warm in late August, but what kind of things do you think are great little items that you can kind of wear regularly for your autumn wardrobe?
Yeah, so I think number one would be layering. So let's maybe start with some, you know, some of those light tops that you will put in underneath that will also carry you through to kind of into the when the weather does start to pick up again. But with them now in winter, you know, you can layer them. And I'm all about the layers for winter. So having, you know, big, chunky, cozy knits that you can wear with maybe a satin slip skirt. You can either wear it with leggings and trainers. You can wear it with a pair of jeans. Those items, to me, I get loads of wear out of them. I've had certain ones for the last few years that I pull out every winter. And even, like, look, living in Ireland, the weather can be very unpredictable. I get wear out of them in other seasons as well, but particularly in kind of autumn, winter, those bigger, chunky knits.
And I have to ask you as well, because I am at the age where it's wedding after wedding after engagement after wedding. And obviously with even the styling or the style evening at the Tramore races and obviously all the events that you'd be going to, are there any nice pieces that you think have sprung up in the last while at these sorts of events, you know, occasion wear? Is there anything that has caught your eye even in the past week or so that you think might work well in the months ahead?
Maybe I'll start with the colours. So I think coming for casual wear and occasion wear coming into autumn, winter this year, I think the earthy tones like the cocoa browns, which you'll be seeing, which you will have seen already, they're going to stay. The deep plums, the olive greens, they're all going to stay, those lovely earthy tones. And I think the neutral tones, you know, the creams, the beiges, they'll always be, you know, every season they'll always stay. But as well, to mix it up a small bit, you know, it'll be contrasted with unexpected pops of the likes of powder blue and that brat green that we saw that was quite trendy. So not just the olive green, it'll be that brat green as well as that powder bluey colour.
Which is nice as well, because sometimes there are the kind of stereotypical colours for certain times of the year. So it's probably nice to have a little pop of colour, you know, unexpectedly in the autumn time.
Yes, for sure. And like, while I do love my, you know, my olives, my browns, my kind of deep reds, you know, that powder blue, it's nice, it's bright, and you know, it kind of lends itself to that brighter family, which can help your mood if you're not always wanting to dress in those darker colours.
I know as well, you're married to TJ, and TJ Reid, if people don't know, that is a very famous Kilkenny hurler, and you're a great support, even though you're a Limerick woman, we'll say that you're a great support to the Kilkenny team when they're not playing Limerick. Over the past few months, you know, you'd go to all the games and all that. Will you be doing the same now for the club championship?
Yeah, for sure. Like, look, from living in Ballyhale the last 10 years, it's really opened my eyes to the club. The club is where it all begins. It's where they always, you know, gravitate back to. I missed one of the games last Saturday because I was at the races, so I haven't been the best supporter because things have been colliding with it for the last two games, and with the pregnancy sickness. But they're playing this Saturday again, so I have every intention of being there in my green and white.
Fantastic. Niamh, it's been a pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for coming on this week's Sunday Grill. I'll be taking all of those things into account when I do my online shopping now in the next few weeks. And for anyone who doesn't follow you already, where can they find you?
I'm probably most active on Instagram. My username is @NiamhDeBrune.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
You are listening to Beat. If you haven't noticed already, it's Aoife in for Orla on this week's Sunday Grill. Some romance and a new movie next. A young, ambitious New York City matchmaker finds herself torn between the perfect match and her imperfect ex. Materialists stars Dakota Johnson, Pedro Pascal, Chris Evans, and features a love triangle set in New York City. Let's have a little listen to that.
Hey, are you single? I'm a matchmaker. Give me a call if you want to meet somebody.
I deserve someone who fulfills all of my criteria.
Nothing over 20 BMI.
I don't want someone who likes cats.
I'm trying to settle.
I promise you're going to marry the love of your life.
How many marriages are you responsible for now, Lucy?
9. If the girl asks for a tall drink of water with a salary over 500 grand, always Mr. Right. You deliver.
You're the matchmaker. You want a drink?
Sure.
We are joined by Beat movie guru and on the street extraordinaire, Brian Griffin. Brian, Materialists, what do we think?
Interesting. How do I break this down? So basically, yeah, it's dead right. It's Dakota Johnson. Do you know what's always funny? When you're saying it's a love triangle, it got me thinking. It's like, it's not really a love triangle. It's more like a love corner, really, isn't it?
Because
it's Pedro Pascal and Chris Evans both want Dakota Johnson. They don't want each other as
well. But she's the girl on top, no?
Well, like, she could be at, like, it's like an angle, though, but like, they don't want each other as
well. Okay, you know, my brain isn't too mathematical, Brian.
Yeah, well, a triangle has three sides. A corner only would have basically two.
Okay, you didn't sound too enthusiastic. Tell me why.
So it's, do you know when you're, like, I'm friends with a lot of girls. Do you know when you're talking to a girl and they just start going on a rant and it's just nonsense and you have to listen to it and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, men are awful. That's what this movie was.
Oh.
And I'm not going to lie, halfway through I did check my phone to see how long was left and I went, oh my God, there's an hour left.
Okay.
So I was not having fun.
So it's very geared towards females, do you think?
It's not. It's just geared towards shallow people that want everything, that think they deserve everything, but really they have nothing to give.
And does Dakota Johnson, what's her name in the movie? What's the main
actor?
Lucy. Does Lucy give up off that vibe?
Lucy annoys me so much.
Right.
So she is like, I want to find someone that's good. I don't really care about all these different things. And then the whole movie is about how, oh my God, do I pick Pedro Pascal because he's rich or do I pick Chris Evans because he's like better personality wise for me, but he's poor. And then you learn halfway through the movie that she broke up with Chris Evans originally after going out for 5 years because he's poor. And that the whole thing is basically about you need money in order to be happy. And
is that the moral of the story? You know, obviously.
That's the moral. It's like the whole thing is, oh no, maybe it's not all about money, but then it's constantly like they're talking about like getting these surgeries to make yourself look better because it's actually more important to be better. And if you have money, you should absolutely spend it on yourself to look better because it's more important to look good than be a good person. And it's like,
is it funny or is it serious?
There's one joke in the entire movie.
Okay.
And at that, like, I was like, okay, maybe it's going to change now. And it doesn't. It just gets more. It reminds me of someone writing a script for the first time. And you're like, okay, they have a bare grasp of how people will converse with each other. But they don't really know how people actually communicate.
And it obviously had all of the big names, Dakota Johnson, Pedro Pascal, Chris Evans. It had the potential, it had the set.
It had a couple of people in the cinema that I was watching it in yawning. That was kind of funny to me, I'm not going to lie. And there was also two women that were just there and then Dakota Johnson would say something and I'd be like, oh my God, why did she do that? So that actually maybe that was the most enjoyable part of it for me. But it was just pure nonsense. It's all like she's
now. We should say as well, Brian. But you are someone that enjoys a romantic movie.
I love rom coms.
Yes,
this movie just made me wish I was watching Notting Hill all the way through.
Okay, so it's not necessarily that this is not a movie for someone who doesn't enjoy a romantic movie. It's just that it's not a good movie.
It's female gaze through and through.
Okay,
and I'm just not female gaze led. Now I don't mind a female gaze movie.
You don't mind a female gaze at you?
I don't mind. Nothing against any of the female gaze. I'm an ally. But the thing is that this movie is just all about the people that like want everything. And the movie sets itself up as everyone has these impossible standards. Like that's not what life is. Like you can't just have everything you want. And the whole movie is about Dakota Johnson wanting everything. It even just annoys me so much, right? So there's a certain point that really not, well, first of all, she was like, I don't want my 5 year anniversary to be us going to a place and getting kebabs for a 5 year anniversary. She's gone from that point. She's lost me. But it was all about like how Pedro Pascal will pay for everything. He'll pay for all these expensive meals for her. And it's like, okay, grand. And then it's like she's meeting up with Chris Evans and she's like, oh, I make 80K a year. And he's broke because he's pursuing his acting dream, which she gave up on the same dream to like get money. And she's like, when she's meeting up with Chris Evans, he still has to pay for everything or whatever. And like, where's the compromise in this? Do you know, like, what is this? This is destined to fail. And she only seems to show interest in Chris Evans when he ends up putting on a tux at one stage. So it's like, it's just shallowness, the movie.
I've seen the movie. Really is a material girl through and through.
I don't mind someone being materialistic. I think, go for it. Like, you know, if you want to be someone that getting that bag, I actually respect people that are like, oh, I'm only going to marry for the money. Go for it. But if you're someone they're trying to make a point of,
she wants it all.
It's not all about the money and then caring about the money all the way through. Shut up. Like.
Do you think the answer to this movie would have been a nice person that just happens to have money then?
It's no, she wants, like, Pedro, like, I just felt like there was no emotion in this movie. Everything was just so bland and deadpan. There was no, like, humor. There was no wistfulness. There was no, like, that magic of a romance movie where, like, they need to be together.
Because I was going to say, what was New York like as the location? I love New York City. I think it's the most magical, beautiful place in the world. Do you get a sense of that in the movie even?
No, it's just all about rich and poor. And if rich equals good and poor equals bad,
ooh,
that's the vibe you get from it. And I'm like, maybe I just associate with the poor people. Maybe that's all it is. It's like the rich thing is like having an apartment that costs
$5 million. Upper East Side sort of thing.
It's just a life that I just know nothing about, like, you know?
Yeah.
Because my apartment's only cost €4 and €5 million. So I don't know anything about this 12 million scale, you know?
Is there anything positive to take away from it, do you think? What about the actors? You're saying Dakota Johnson is unlikable, but is she supposed to be unlikable? Is she actually meant to be a likable character? Does she play that part well?
She's supposed to be someone that's struggling to find someone that actually just appreciates her. And then she had someone that... It's literally choosing personality or money. And then she just gets a happy medium. And Chris Evans is likable because it's Chris Evans. You can't not like Chris Evans. But he's also given... Like, it's so hypocritical as well, because there's this whole thing where there's this character and he's 48 and he wants someone that's like 28 or 29, like 27 to 29. And you're like, wow, age difference. Then, like, the whole point is like men are so shallow. All they want is a young girl. And then it's like Pedro Pascal is 50 and Dakota Johnson is 34. It's like,
it's the same thing, just a difference.
Is nearly the same, like, you know?
Fair.
And Chris Evans plays someone who's 37 and he's like 44. And they're like, if you don't want to show off that there's like, you want to show that they're close in age or something. And if they were going out for 5 years and they were broken up, that means that she was like whatever and he was like... Well, so it's like, I don't know. If you want to make a point, stand by it, but don't be like hypocritical in the casting.
Do you think that there would be anyone that would enjoy this movie? Like you were saying, you were looking across the theatre.
People that just want to push their own agenda. People that just want to be like, men are awful and men need to make more money and stuff. I don't know.
I'd say there's a few of those out there.
There's a ton of them. But I'm it's just not a movie for me.
Okay.
And I feel like people will come up to me like, oh, Brian, you didn't like that now and I loved it. I was like, yeah, go for it. That's the whole point of the movie is people have different opinions on things.
Okay.
But
Here's Brian's opinion. Black puddings.
3. I don't know. I just found it so boring. I feel like it wants to show off that women can be empowered. And like, I love a good women empowerment movie. I got dressed up to see Barbie. I watched Promising Young Woman the second it came out. There was no romance in it. It's supposed to be a romance movie, but there's no romance in it. All the characters are just so weird.
There was no one being swept off their feet, really.
But it's like, it's all been like, being swept off your feet doesn't happen. But it's like, why not? You know, the whole point of movies is to break away from reality. Pedro Pascal just has no aura to him either.
Okay. So, 3 out of 10 for materialists. Yeah. Brian.
I don't think I'm materialistic. I think maybe that's the issue.
Yeah, maybe that is the issue. Look, if you think that you might enjoy it, it's out in cinemas now, including Odeon. Thanks so much, Brian. You'll be back again next week, hopefully, with a better movie.
Attacked by people with all the money.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's Sunday morning and you're listening to The Sunday Grill on Beat. We've been chatting a lot about getting prepped for the autumn. To tell us what we need to watch, we have Donal O'Donoghue from the RTE Guide, a Sunday Grill icon, in my view. Donal, big news this week. The trailer for House of Guinness has just dropped on Netflix, created by Stephen Knight, people might know also as the creator of Peaky Blinders. Are you really excited for this? And what can people expect with House of Guinness?
I'm really excited. Actually, I was on the set last year in Liverpool. And coincidentally, the day I was on set, Stephen Knight happened to come up from London the very same day. So I literally, I hate the word literally. I walked the set with Stephen Knight.
Wow.
But him seeing the set for the first time, it was the most incredible set, Aoife. It was like this huge old tobacco warehouse. I think it's the biggest freestanding tobacco warehouse in the world. It's a must, and it's basically recreating the Guinness factory, circa late 18th century, sort of 17, when it all kicked off. The series, I was on the set, a lot of the cast are Irish. It looks magnificent. The recreation, the production quality is amazing. Actually, by the way, the trailer dropped, as you said, just last week. It was actually originally slated for early transmission in early 2026, but they just love it so much, Netflix do, they're actually pulled it back now. They want it to be their own next version. They want it to be the next Crown, you know?
Right.
I suppose you could call it the Harp, couldn't you, if it's Guinness? boop.
And I guess Liverpool works well in terms of a place to film it because they're both kind of industrial cities in some ways, aren't they?
Absolutely, because what they've done on the set is just this huge, as a gigantic sort of set. So they had to recreate this factory. Obviously, they couldn't use the actual Guinness factory in Dublin because it's a working industry. They actually looked at that initially, and they actually looked all over Dublin trying to get a place. They actually also went to a southern part of England, somewhere else, like near Bath or something like that, I believe, as well. That was never going to work. So yes, they found this place eventually in Liverpool that actually works for them. And there's some shots in Dublin as well. Sorry, in Ireland, I should say, as well. Some of the exterior stuff is in Ireland as well, actually. But yeah, they had to find a place that it would actually contain the world of the Guinnesses. The story is basically the struggle for power. Who's going to take over? Author this? Which is the sons? It's basically like Succession, the yes. Brian Cox media struggle, power struggle. This is basically the struggle of the Guinness family trying who's going to take over the empire, the Guinness empire. Got a great cast, actually. Anthony Boyle who's a brilliant actor. He plays Arthur Guinness, who's the man who does, as you know now, took over.
As it was back in the day.
Exactly. And then I met James Norton as well. He plays an enforcer. He plays the right-hand man. He's the kind of like the tough guy. The day I met him actually was very funny. He was doing a little piece in the camera, Aoife, and his accent was pretty a bit ropey.
But right.
What's my Dublin accent like? I said, not bad. He's a great actor though. James Norton is great. I'd watch James Norton in anything actually. I mean, Happy Valley, he's such a good baddie, you know. But the cast are mainly Irish, a lot of Irish crew involved as well. Stephen Knight, I mean, what he did with Peaky Blinders with sort of period drama, I can imagine him doing something similar with the House of Guinness. It's going to be huge. I think it's going to be huge anyway. It's coming on September 25th. So about a month to go.
We don't have long to wait. I was going to say, do you think that it might have the same, I guess you're talking about family, will there be a bit of romance? And I was thinking, will it be Downton Abbey vibes, or would it be more sort of the violence and power of Peaky Blinders, or what way it might go?
I actually have a couple of previews which I haven't watched yet, but it will be Downtown. It'll be Downtown Abbey, probably. You're probably right. I suspect that, listen, there is romance in it. Of course there's romance in it. It's a brilliant cast. But there is definitely darkness as well. And obviously it's the power struggle. It's a family struggling with itself and, you know, almost tearing itself apart to become what it became. You know, they'd be one of the biggest brewers in the world, you know. So it's like the beginning of an era, beginning of an empire. And it's got, like I said, they want it to be the next crown. And the crown drew in history, but also drew a lot of, you know, entertainment value as well, you know. So I imagine this is going to be epic in every sense of the word.
Now, I know as well there is a lot going on live on TV this weekend as well. Tonight, King and Conqueror, 9:10 on BBC One. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is the King in this case is William the Conqueror. It's historical drama. BBC does this usually very, very well. Mm. I mentioned James Norton earlier, and James Norton, the man himself, he plays William the Conqueror. It tells the story basically of William the Conqueror's ascension to the English throne, and it's an eight episode drama. So basically, we meet him. Tonight's episode, we have Harold Godwinson and William of Normandy meet for the first time as two noblemen. And then the all-star cast, apart from James Norton, who I'd watched basically in anything really. it also includes Nikolai Coster-Waldau. You remember the guy from Game of Thrones, the good-looking blonde-haired guy? Emily Beecham and Clemence Posey is also in it. Good cast. Should be amazing production. And James Norton, like I said, I'll watch this for James Norton. It just names James Norton alone, who we'll see later next month in House of Guinness. Are you a fan of historical dramas, Aoife?
Yeah, I am. I'd be quite interested, actually, in King and the Conqueror, because this part of the country in particular had the Normans made a big impact on Waterford, Wexford, Kilkenny, New Ross. The Norman invasion of Ireland in 1170, actually, they landed in the southeast first. So,
of course.
Here's the precursor for people that want to know what happened beforehand. Tell us, on Thursday, this is hotly anticipated, the Thursday Murder Club on Netflix. Fantastic cast as well.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, the books themselves, Richard Osman's book, The Thursday Murder Club. Richard Osman, as you know, from TV, but then latterly is a globally best-selling novelist. Incredible. This has been in the pipeline for a while, the national adaptation. And The Thursday Murder Club has got an incredible cast, as you say. It's got like Helen Mirren, Pierce Brosnan, Ben Kingsley, and Celia Imrie. And basically, it's based on the best-selling novels. Basically, four retirees living in a quaint retirement village in England decide to take it upon themselves to be sort of like Miss Marples, or Mr. Marples in this case, So they start, they set up this murder club, there's the murder club in the retirement home. It's a comedy, okay, like this, it's a movie, right? It's got a good movie, so a bit of fun. I've only seen the trailer, but like the, so basically they're going to set up this kind of club which they have in the retirement home. So they have to, some days they have to hurry up because it's like crochet classes, it's being followed by crochet and knitting class. Anyway, long story short, so then a real murder happens. And they start investigating with their kind of like these amateur sleuths start investigating. And then they become the suspects. But even worse, they become in the crosshairs of the actual real killers. So they are actually in danger. Their own lives are in danger as well. So it's a kind of, sounds like a lot of fun, really.
Yeah, I guess this should be popular when you've had different shows like Bad Sisters and Balkan and, you know, that sort of country crime, humorous sort of show seems to do well. And people seem to enjoy that sort of thing as well.
And exactly, and the fact is it's based on one of the biggest selling books, series of books, I should say, in recent times, the Thursday Murder Club. It's going to be big. It's going to be big. And the cast are like, the cast are brilliant. The cast are great. They should be great, you know. It's funny because Helen Mirren and Pierce Brosnan had been in Mobland. Did you see Mobland was out earlier this year?
I didn't watch it myself. I have a few friends that watched it and said I wouldn't really bother.
Yes, I think it got the most coverage it got was for Pierce Brosnan's very kind of dodgy Irish accent. I think that was the big thing about that one.
Isn't it funny? I mean, look at Jamie Dornan as well. He did a bad Irish accent. Just stick with your own Irish accent. I think that's the key.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there's no dodgy Irish accents just anyway. They're all English, kind of English home county accents and a bit of fun.
And finally, I've seen as well, Donal, that the new season for RTE, some of the shows that are coming include the Welsh Sisters, the Walsh Sisters, whatever you want to call it. We'd say Welsh down here, based on the Marion Keyes books. And also one that is starting this Monday, tomorrow, that is, Mixtape RTE 2. Tell us what that is about.
Very briefly, on the Walsh Sisters, that's based on a couple of novels by Marion Keyes, and it's adapted by Stephanie Preisner. I was on the set of that as well, actually, earlier this year in Dublin, and it looks really, really promising. It's got a brilliant, mostly female cast. Aidan Quinn's in there as well, actually, as Da Walsh. And it's coming, just to show, it's coming later in September, at the end of September, earlier. But first, as I say, Mixtape. Mixtape actually has been here around before, actually. It's actually on RT2 tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m. It's a four-parter. It was on BBC earlier, last month, actually, in July.
Okay.
Basically, I don't know, did you ever make a mixtape? Do you know what a mixtape is?
I know what a mixtape is.
Young,
a playlist.
Like a playlist, just, exactly. Yeah, a playlist. Yeah, basically, like back in the day, you'd make it if you fancied somebody or whatever, you'd make them. Some people would make a mixtape of their favorite songs for this person and then whatever, you know. But anyway, this is the story of a couple. It's based on the novel by Jane Sanderson, another best-selling novel. So basically, it begins in 1989 in Sheffield, in England, and teenagers Alison and Daniel meet at a house party. The bond of a shared passion of music become closer and closer, and then become one another's first love. And then fast forward 20 years later, Daniel's now gone, is still in Sheffield, but Alison is living in Australia, and the wonder of what might have been, because they're no longer together. So I think 20 years later, what might have been. And then Daniel kind of goes, what do I do? So he reaches out to Alison online in the hope that maybe the spark might be reignited. And Alison, obviously equally kind of wary and hesitant, she accepts it. And then the thing is like, will they spark? It's a four-parter. It's double timeline. So you have the timeline from then and now. The cast apparently, I didn't see this back in July, but the cast apparently are excellent in this as well, actually. I love the whole premise of this, actually.
Yeah, I love the fact it uses music too. Yeah, and I was going to say, I wonder how good the casting is in terms
apparently of... excellent.
Yeah, the younger versions older versions.
Exactly. It's like, did you ever watch One Day, David Nichols? It's got a sense of that of it, and also Sally Rooney kind of stuff as well.
It's a Sin maybe as well, that kind of 80s, 90s to present day sort of thing.
Yes.
Sounds great. Well, lots for us to digest. I can't wait to just get into the swing of coming home from work and putting on some of these shows over the next few weeks. Donal O'Donoghue from RTE Guide, thank you so much for coming on this week's Sunday Grill. And you'll be back again next week with Orla, no doubt.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.